Okay, there are two overall discussion topics. We're going to talk about some current activities that we know of or have been involved in, and then give you some recommendations for the future. But before I start, I want to ask you a question. Who do you think are the unreachable or the least prepared populations? Homeless? Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Sick? Poor? Deaf? Elderly? Immigrants? Children? Okay, that's great. That's great. Okay, now we're going the wrong way. There we go. No, I got it now. Okay, we all remember these images from the fall of 2005. And one of my personal goals, as well as Nikkei, is to never see this sort of thing happen again. In this country, we've done a lot of work on preparedness and response. We've conducted a lot of exercises. We've participated in a lot of exercises. We've purchased equipment. We've developed state and local plans. But what have we not done well or enough of? And that's educating our community residents on individual, family, and community preparedness. Okay? We don't have repositories or models for educators to utilize, and we're not utilizing currently to the fullest lessons learned from 2005. One program that I'm going to talk to you about that's currently being funded by the Department of Health and Human Services is the Drexel University School of Public Health Center for Health Equality. They receive money through the Office of Minority Health, which is located in the Office of the Secretary, and this was to provide guidance and assistance to public and private organizations across the United States. And the major purpose was to collect information that would assist programs to integrate racially and ethnically diverse communities into emergency event planning and delivery. This program, if you don't know, is located in Philadelphia. And Drexel is to become, hopefully, a clearinghouse for information on preparedness for these populations. So, what did they find out? They looked at approximately 301 websites with generic preparedness information. 51% of those websites sort of mentioned racial ethnic groups. 31% talked about translating materials into one or two languages. 13% of the 301 websites explicitly had information dealing with racial ethnic populations that you could actually utilize and model in the communities. Okay. So what they found was, before an emergency, populations of color are more likely to be unprepared. They're less likely to receive disaster educational opportunities and less likely to be involved in preparedness activities. During an emergency, if we look at warning communications, populations of color are less exposed to disaster warnings and evacuation information, and they often rely on informal sources or informal networks. They're also more likely to encounter cultural and language barriers. If we look at physical impact, they experience disproportionately higher morbidity, mortality, and injury. After emergency, populations of color recover more slowly because they're more likely to experience cultural barriers, receive inaccurate or incomplete information due to language barriers, and experience other bureaucratic barriers, which we've read about in the newspapers and have seen on various stories that have been done. Some current initiatives that they found were that there are abundant resources and initiatives on preparedness, and that most of these programs did acknowledge the need to address preparedness and response for racial ethnic communities. As I stated earlier, some provided translation materials or materials that were translated, and there are a handful of promising models. Some of the areas of concentration at the state and local level, including development of resource guides, but not all of those are at a low enough readability level for people to use them. Training and education, community residents have not been included in that training and education for the most part. Policies and programs, and then measurement. Some recommendations that were found in the literature include risk communication strategies need to overcome culture and language barriers. We can't take the one-size-fits-all approach. And places like California and New York City that have racially ethnic diverse communities have spent a lot of time developing these materials and tailoring messages and making messages acceptable and not just translating from English into Spanish or to another language. In terms of academic centers, the next one is knowledge and skills related to culturally diverse communities, and they should be integrated into public health training content. Well, you know, the federal government did put money out for a number of centers for public health preparedness. We have a number of representatives sitting in here, right at the front, over here. So they've made a recommendation that we need to integrate these activities or integrate racial and ethnic concerns into tabletop exercises and add specific content to our curricula within our academic centers. In terms of coordinating federal, state, and local level resources, my experience at the local, state, and federal level, I know firsthand that resources are not coordinated, they're not integrated, and that we need to do more of that. We need to centralize some of this information. We need to increase our collaboration among and between all levels of government and the public and private sectors. And we need to decrease the silos that have formed. And basically part of that responsibility is at the federal level because money comes out categorically and it's very narrow and you can't merge your money with other pots of money. And we've been trying to get the feds, and I'm a fed, we've been trying to get the feds to do that for many, many years. So we're still trying to fight that battle. Developing evidence-based measurement and evaluation. There are many research organizations and federal agencies who've had difficulty developing these instruments. I'm a former staffer of CDC, and I know that CDC has had a lot of difficulty trying to develop evaluation metrics for the preparedness program. They've hired other research organizations, and they've come up with some models, but they just don't seem to be adequate in terms of measuring what we're actually trying to measure at this current time. We need to increase the amount of qualitative research that's being done that could help us with these development of these tools and the collection and analysis of the data that would allow us to better serve populations of color. And then including diversity in national and state preparedness policies and program priorities. We need to develop state and national standards, and we need to promote the importance of including populations of color in everything we do regarding preparedness, but in public health in general. Okay, the second program I'd like to tell you about is being sponsored by the Philadelphia County Medical Society, and Health and Human Services is also supporting this effort. And in Philadelphia, the County Medical Society has a Block Captains Healthcare Advisory Council. The City of Philadelphia Administration, a number of years ago, created a category called Block Captains, and this was to allow the administration to work better with its constituents. And so the mayor would call people in from the neighborhoods, share with them their vision for the city, and then they were supposed to go back and spread the word, okay, and then, of course, get more votes. Well, we decided to utilize the opportunity that had been put before us, and the Philadelphia Department of Public Health, as well as the County Medical Society, said, well, there's this population of people here, people that we're trying to reach that are out there in the neighborhoods and in the communities. Why don't we try to bring them in and train them on things that, you know, we're trying to address in our communities in the whole area of prevention and now preparedness. So this program, a collaboration between the Health Department and the Medical Society, began in 1998-1999. And there are approximately 6,000 Block Captains in Philadelphia currently. The Medical Society provides training on many of the health issues that we know about, obesity, physical activity, nutrition, the whole gamut. And now we're beginning to incorporate training on preparedness. This is just a map of Philadelphia. The outlines that you see are the 52 neighborhoods that Philadelphia is broken up into, And of course, within those neighborhoods are the blocks. And generally, when we have these meetings, they're pretty representative of people throughout the whole city. Philadelphia has approximately 1.5 million people, and it experiences regular, routine, all-hazards incidents. We're not just training or sharing this information with the community members to wait for the next terrorist bomb to drop on us. There are routine all-hazard incidents that we deal with. We deal with floods regularly due to heavy rains or the aftermath of any hurricanes that come across the Gulf Coast. Of course, there are routine fires. We have severe winters, snow and ice, loss of electricity. And so what we're trying to train them will be applicable across, okay, I'm just about finished. Thank you. Across the whole venue. So actually this Thursday, November 8th, from 6:30 to 8:30, there's going to be a dinner meeting on preparedness. And this is part of the routine quarterly meetings that we have with the block captains. I already mentioned the partners and information to be shared. You can see listed there. Emergencies and threats, response planning, block captain's role. And in terms of the block captain's role, we want them to take home the message that they need to know their neighbors, maintain contact info on their neighbors, get prepared, and perhaps look into joining the Medical Reserve Corps. In terms of Ready or Not, which is a program sponsored by the city, the messages there are get a kit, make a plan, be informed. So other resources that they'll walk away with, we have brochures and handouts, and we're actually going to be giving these individuals emergency kits with supplies in them that they can find at the dollar store or at the Kmart or what have you, and then begin talking to, you know, people in their communities about, you know, doing that sort of thing for family and individual preparedness. I probably have 1 minute left and two slides. So I just wanted to share this with you, one of the activities that is occurring at the federal level. We know that there have been many definitions for at-risk, special needs, vulnerable populations, and one activity that HHS has been working on was trying to develop a standardized definition that would be consistent across everything and all the agencies within HHS, well, hopefully all the agencies in the federal government, but initially with HHS. A standardized definition has already been incorporated into the National Response Framework, formerly the National Response Plan, and also the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act, which was implemented last December and has changed everything we do regarding preparedness within HHS. It was multidisciplinary, it has a function-based approach, and this approach allows a common definition once again. And lastly, within the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act, this is the definition that's currently being used. There may be some more bullets that are added, but we're trying to make sure that we capture everyone out there and that it does fall into our regulatory language, so there will not be any concerns in terms of serving those populations. Okay, and I will present my partner, Dr. Adenike Vito, and she will follow up.
Thank you, Michelle. I want to thank you also very much for coming this afternoon. As mentioned, my name is Adenike Vito. I'm an epidemiologist and an associate professor of health at East Strasburg University of Pennsylvania. If you go 2 hours west of New York City and you shut your eye, you just drove past us. We used to be a very small community, but since the aftermath of 9/11, many people are moving out of New York City, and we're becoming more and more their bedroom community. So maybe in 5-10 years, when you shut your eye, you would still see us. I have a doctorate in public health from Johns Hopkins University of Public Health, as well as a master's of public health from there. And some of the interesting things that I think I've done is this summer I served as a secretary for the Pennsylvania Association of Public Health. And I would encourage you to join PPHA. Now, in terms of the presentation, I wanted to ask by show of hands, how many of you have this in your hotel room? We're talking of preparedness for vulnerable populations. So it has a battery. You hand crank it, and you get light. How many people, by show of hands, your emergency radio? One, right here with you, or in your car downstairs? One? All right, thank you. Just one person. All right. talking about preparedness for vulnerable populations and for special populations. There's some guys in the room. How many of you have copies of this, sets of this in your preparedness kit? Special things that women need. And for the guys, please, could you just, one of you just pull out your shaving kit, if you'd be so kind, if you travel around with it. In other words, preparedness covers everything, I'm thinking, not just some of what we would traditionally think about. And if you have children, how many people have some crayons and some pencils to keep them involved and active when you're cooped up somewhere for a long time? In our, I serve also on the borough's serious health department, the borough council, and we came up with this for a pandemic influenza, a colouring book. So those might be good supplies that somebody would think of having with them. The other question I wanted to ask about was, how many of us have called home since we arrived here? To remind? All right. But thank you. But specifically, in addition to hello and I got here safely, to remind our loved ones of the prior pandemic emergency plans you had in place. So I'm not here now to ramrod it, but if anything happens, proceed as we had stated, move to the state or call this person. How many people did that in their discussions? All right, thank you. So I was just wondering that if I'm talking of who else is unprepared, can and should we include the conscientious, caring public health workers sitting right around here, us here in this room, who if we'd said at a drop of a hat there's an emergency, watch them, suit up and go out to help other people. But what of us? What of us? I'm guilty too. So, so supervisors and colleagues, if you're present here today, and we have to remind us, the public health, and other first responders, that we matter, and we need to put these things into place for ourselves. And remember, on the airplane, they tell you put on your oxygen mask in the case of an emergency, and then put it on for the persons who are with you. So, please, this is just a reminder that we may also be vulnerable populations. We're so geared up to help others. What of us? What of us? In rural Pennsylvania, we have other kinds of communities that need help. But we have farmlands and lots of rural communities. Many of you will remember that our Pennsylvania Dutch, lost so many horses during the West Nile virus outbreak. They didn't quite understand the need to get immunization for those. Now, you know, if you're farming, you need horses, you need horsepower. So that was a terrible loss there. So that just gives us an example of other kinds of situations in which we need to reach out. I don't know how, because they were persuaded that they did not need the vaccines until the animals died. It was rather late then. Maybe they saved a few. In our rural colleges, we have many first generation. So you can imagine that many of the things that you would teach maybe in North Carolina or other schools, we have to kind of like temper it down where we're at. How do you reach these populations? Because you could have said, teach the college kids, they'll take it out. But first generation, you're struggling with how do you study, what's college and stuff like that. So that's another challenge we face with. How do we reach these populations? I was wondering, cooperative extension units, when I go to have my hair fixed, it's like having a preparedness meeting. Aha, Dr. Beto, you know that lady? Yes, speak with her. That thing you were telling us about pandemic influenza, what was it again? And I'm thinking, all right, my work comes here. Will I get compensation for working? So we can do that. The barber shops, our diners and restaurants, sororities and fraternities on campuses, through the faith-based community, we understand that many of our minorities, we believe strongly in faith, and it sees us through another day. These community associations and social networks can help us. Rotary Club. I spoke out in one of our areas there, at the Rotary Club meeting. You could see the bondedness between them. In the case of an emergency, these are the people who will call up. Nikki, are you safe? Do you understand what's happening? So if we put the messages in our community organizations, they can take charge when something happens if the first responders cannot get to everybody. And of course, you're probably thinking of many other relevant community associations at this time. One of the other, Davies had mentioned the vertical program, sort of, you know, funding is categorical for this, you cannot quite use it for the other. But however, in a person's mind, if they see preparedness, Healthy People 2010, and all these initiatives, that's one. I think it would help us to kind of help incorporate and integrate the different initiatives that we're doing in community. We need to use the opinion leaders. In East Stroudsburg, our Mayor Martinelli, he was very good. Last summer, we all worked so hard with the health board and the health officer, Mr. Jim Blick. We came up with different initiatives. I showed you one of the brochures. We came out to help the children, and we had these huge posters that we also developed that we're trying to make sure every resident has it, because we're believing if there are not going to be enough vaccines, if there are not going to be enough medications, who knows what strain will cause pandemic flu. then back to fundamental environmental sanitation, so the mayor and the other trusted leaders can work with you. The final slide that we had was to thank you and you and you for all your efforts on behalf of the unreachable. I don't think it's by chance that you're here today. You've probably done a lot of work, as you heard from the first set of presenters, and you're not talking about yours, but I know and I suspect that you've done this. So we want to thank you. Perhaps you felt and appreciated that people are just talking about what didn't have to go down in Katrina. We didn't do this, we didn't do that. We recognize that many people have done something in these different kinds of areas. And we personally, I mean, it's not our place, but we feel a burden to just say thank you to you. We want to thank Black Caucus. We thank the Disability Forum and all that they do. We thank public-private partnerships that you probably represent and many, many more. These are just a small sample of people. And of course, we thank APHA for this opportunity to be here today. Thank you so very much. Mm-hmm.